All right, let's get started this morning. if I can get Devin, if you'll read Acts 10 and verse 33. This morning, we're going to kick off a revival, and if I remember correctly, I think it was my first revival here in Prescott since I moved here. I think that's accurate, but anyhow. This is something in our fellowship that we do, is revivals. And this serious man is to help give you an understanding of why we do them, number one, and then secondly, how to prepare for a revival. So very, very practical lesson for us. In our scripture, Cornelius calls Peter to come. He invites him to come to hear a message that the Lord gave to Peter, and that unlocks a supernatural dimension. We know the story. Cornelius's house gets saved, gets baptized, and converted to Jesus. And that's in essence a picture of revival, inviting someone, and then we'll get into all the mechanics of that. Acts 10 and verse 33.
So I sent to you immediately, and you have done well to come. Now, therefore, we are all present before God to hear all the things commanded you by God.
Okay, to hear all the things commanded you by God. Okay, let's think about why revivals. First, we must understand the rationale for having a revival. Number one, you do or host revivals as a form of evangelism. That is the main thrust and aim of having a guest speaker come in, is to draw visitors. So remember, just like the concert ministry, what's the primary focus? What's the primary purpose? It's for visitors. It's for the unsaved. It's to draw people to hear the message of Jesus Christ. So the same is for revivals. It's an evangelistic tool to draw people into your church that maybe they may not come to some other event that you have, but to know of a guest speaker coming in or in whatever way he ministers, which we'll talk about a little bit later, could draw people to come to church and get radically converted and added to the church. Number one, it's an evangelistic tool. Number two, the reason why we have revivals is to bring a supernatural dimension to your church. Okay, evangelists usually have an emphasis to their ministry, right? They come and that emphasis establishes the supernatural. This could be the gifts of the Spirit. This could be a healing ministry. This could be that they have a radical testimony. This could be that they're great at stirring evangelism in your church. They're inspiring or motivating. There's a supernatural dimension on their life. So when they come in, they're bringing a dimension that you as the pastor either may not have, or because you are the pastor, doesn't come across as well. I've preached sermons, and I've, you know, labored, and you know, you bring a evangelist in and they say the same thing you've been saying for 6 months and it sinks in. Pastor, when he said, it's like, I've been telling you that, but yes, you got it. So that's what matters now, right? And so, but nonetheless, is they bring a dimension. You know, I remember bringing Pastor Artie Aragon into Rochester, New York, and man, there was a healing dimension in that revival. Not only is Pastor Artie Aragon a gracious pastor, you know, where people are just drawn, he's a people person, and they gravitate to him. But with that meeting, man, really the incredible part of that revival that he did for us in Rochester was actually more after the service. Right? People were ministered to and helped, and people were saved, but visitors were coming because he was praying for the sick after every service, and we had some dramatic miracles taking place, supernatural. People were coming for the after service. It was like we had two services every night. It was just an incredible time, but that was a supernatural dimension. Evangelist Hart, we had him into Rochester, and as he was ministering through the week, he said, I really feel that God wants to give every person a word this week. And man, he's laboring and pouring himself out. And yeah, a church of 90, 95 people in the week, by the Thursday night, every person got a word. That was a Holy Ghost dimension, word of knowledge, wisdom, and encouragement at work that I could not bring, right? So this is why we have this. They bring something beyond to the congregation. Thirdly, is many times you'll have a revival because your guest speaker has an experienced dimension. We have a fellowship that has a diversity of experience, right? So you have men, think about this, pioneers. They're laboring, they're out there, and you know, it's their first church, it's their first time out. By bringing in someone with a seasoned ministry, right? They can say things to the congregation or challenge the congregation in a different or higher way. They have the same vision, they have the same spirit, a fellowship spirit, but the delivery is seasoned. And I remember going into Santa Fe, New Mexico. I'm a brand new pastor, and our revivals were always fruitful, and I was very particular of who I would bring in to revivals, and even in Rochester, very particular, but they could bring seasoned ministry to the congregation. So you have this at work. Younger men can bring in experienced men who can see what they aren't seeing. Right? Sometimes, you know, as you pastor, your weird abnormalities become normal to you. Right? So it's good when you get a guest speaker. And again, I would bring in men that I trusted. Men that I knew they had credibility. So I would ask them, you know, you have fresh eyes for my church. Point out to me maybe some areas, you know. And obviously a seasoned minister is going to do that graciously and tactfully, right? But nonetheless is they could point out things that it's like, yeah, you know, that really is a distraction, or that really stands out, or, you know, whatever the case might be. So these factors, they bring an experienced dimension. And then you have to understand some men can bring more than one dimension. So it helps to know the person you're bringing in, the pastor, the evangelist that you're bringing in. It helps to know what they have to offer. It helps to know that when you bring them in, you know what you need from them. Right? As, hey, you operate in the gift of words, you know, knowledge, wisdom, and encouragement. I really want you to stress that this week. Hey, you know what? Your testimony. I remember bringing in a pastor one time into Rochester. He was actually saved and discipled in the Rochester church years ago. And I knew his testimony was radical. He was the demoniac of Rochester, New York, lived in the biggest graveyard. There he was a madman in the woods crying out in the night, like totally the demoniac. And I asked him, have you ever done a revival on just your testimony? He said, no, I actually never have. And I explained like the Roman Gutierrez idea, right? And we went with that. And I told him, every night I want you to apply a piece of your testimony. And then one of the nights, your full testimony. Man, what a fruitful week that was. As he presented his testimony and done very, very well. But again, I knew what I needed from him and drew it out of him. And then just a unique thing that happened when he came that week, In that week was his 30-year salvation anniversary. And in that week, we went to the Rochester Psych Center and we pulled his files. We purchased his files and read, I mean, stacks of papers. They told him, you're a revolving door. You'll never leave this place. And dramatically healed. And all of the stuff he said was true. So he wasn't lying. It was documented. But the point is, I knew what I needed from him, and I was able to draw it out of him. So that's very helpful, right, is to know that. It would be very bad if you invited someone and said, hey, we want to kick things off with a healing crusade. Yeah, and they don't have, you know, very much confidence in that arena. Okay? Or you invite someone, hey, I really want you to minister in the gifts, and they're not experienced in that area. Okay? That's not going to help you or your church. So it's good to know what they can bring. So not all evangelists or visiting speakers are the same, right? There's some, they have this evangelistic gift to fire people up and inspire them, right? We call them revivalists. Others have a incredible, dramatic, supernatural dimension, gifting, and they're able to operate in that. Others have an ability to draw visitors, right? I have personally never seen in any of my experience, a testimony draw like Romans. It's a supernatural dimension. In fact, the one revival in my entire salvation experience that has ever been extended was here in Prescott with Roman Gutierrez. And that was because visitors were coming. Visitors were getting saved and coming back the next services and bringing more people. Okay, that's the only time you extend a revival, is when it's happening. Visitors are coming, and they're coming back, and people are getting saved, and they're coming back and bringing more people, and they're getting saved and coming back. And so, but again, the drawing of visitors, that's a unique thing. Maybe they have a draw, they have an end times, some type of theme, end times, or their compassion. Just again, like I said, Pastor Aragon, it was that grace and compassion that as people were getting healed, they're like, I know other people. And they're bringing people back, you know, for prayer and etc. Others have something really to say, right? Their words, when they speak immediately, they have your attention. Immediately, every word bears weight and connects into your life, and people are transformed through their ministry. These are supernatural dynamics. Others have foundational ministry. They work really well with new converts. I remember in Santa Fe bringing in someone deliberately because I knew they worked well with new converts. And I said, that is what I need right now. We have a bunch of new converts, right? And not only that, they can connect with older saints. Others, they can teach on foundational or fundamental areas, right? Others, they have wisdom. I remember my first revival that I held in Rochester, it had been years that they hadn't had one. And I knew the situation and everything. So my very first revival that I had was Pastor Jeff Day, who pastored that church years before. Pastor Jeff Day also had wisdom and tact. To set with sensitivity, preach the gospel. It was so helpful in that week. I don't know if it was deliberate or just his what's in him, but you know, again, it was a very rocky situation. But every service, he would always say, "I remember Pastor Mitchell telling me, and I remember Pastor Mitchell taught me, and Pastor Mitchell said this," and it's like he was bringing it all back to the foundations, and it was what the church needed in that moment. 6 months, actually less than 6 months, 3 months later, I had then, again, very tactfully, Pastor Jonathan Heimbergen, because I knew he could bring a dimension of authority and a dimension of foundational principles to the congregation that were so needed. But again, tact and wisdom. Grace, he could be wise as a serpent and gentle as a dove. That's what was needed. So you have these men that can do these things, and you bring them in. So the point is, if a revival doesn't add anything to the congregation, okay, based on everything I looked at, and you're going to have someone in, if it doesn't add anything to the congregation, then it's probably not worth having. There's a few reasons for this. Number one, there's some things to consider. Revivals are going to be the most expensive event that you can do. Okay, if it's just more sermons, and unfortunately there's a lot of men out there that think that's what a revival is, a sermon series. Right? It's just people preaching more and their church coming for more sermons. I'm telling you, you're going to feel that you've wasted your money then, if it's just about more sermons. Other guys, you know, they're out in the field and they have their pioneer buddy in, right? Their friend, they have a connection or relationship with, and in that they're trying to save money. Well, I'm going to tell you, it'll show. It will show. And when you do things like that, you have a friend in, and just because, you know, hey, it's this mutual thing, okay, and you're able to save money or whatever, I'm going to tell you, you're going to destroy your credibility when it comes to revivals. Think about this. If you have a few weak revivals in a row, then when you finally have someone good in, your people are like, the last two were a waste of time. But now that you have someone good, they're not going to want to come. So it's very important to be strategic in your revivals. It's important to look for men who have what you don't have, who can do what you might not be able to do. And then you have to also be willing to admit that. That's humility. There are some guys, they don't want the revival to be successful. That's weird. That's funky. No, we want them to be successful. Have men who have broken through in some things. Have men that have a supernatural edge. Have men with experience. So if you're pioneering now, just this is again a future reference, it would be wise to bounce things off your pastor and see what he thinks of who you're thinking of having. Okay? And he can help you avoid mistakes and then help you guide through making wise decisions. Okay. And in that, yeah, when I brought Pastor Heimberg in, I did call Pastor Greg. I said, what do you think? And he goes, well, who are you thinking of? And I said, Pastor Heimberg, I agree with that. That would be good. Right? So I'm trying very much to navigate that situation. It was very important, very critical. Okay, let's think secondly, how often for revivals? So one question that comes up is, how often should I have revivals? Well, the answer depends on a lot of factors, okay? Number one is finances, especially if you're being supported by your mother church. It's unrealistic to expect or demand a lot of revivals if the mother church can't afford it, okay? And that's, Prescott's very unique. I want you to understand that. And now I'm kind of looking, right, two steps down. You've pioneered and you have a guy out now, okay, and you're supporting him. It might not be realistic for them to constantly have or demand, so you've got to work those things through. So finances could be a factor. Maybe you're pioneering, you've gotten some growth, and your pastor challenges you. Right? You need to believe God for the next revival, for the finances. Right? I remember being in Santa Fe, and we had a revival, and 3 weeks later, the church that split from us in Santa Fe, they split, and the pastor was resigning because of adultery for 9 years. So here's these people, this group of about 20 people now, they don't have a pastor, they don't have a church, it all just disintegrated. And I called Pastor Greg, hey, I just heard that, you know, and he goes, you need to have a revival and invite them to it. I'm like, okay, yeah. And he goes, who do you think? And I said, well, we just finished with Pastor Aragon, and man, the people, they respond to him. And he goes, have him. Call. I will call him. Let him know you're going to be calling. So boom, and we work it out. But then, the finances. We just had a revival. Who's paying for this? Oh, I am. Okay, so now we need to believe God, right? So finances are a factor you're going to have to consider, all right? And God moved. Now you know that we paid the revival. Money came in. God helped us. It is incredible. Incredible time we had. Fruit lock-in from that, from years and years ago in the Santa Fe Church. Secondly is that you need to experiment. See how revivals go for you, okay? Again, we're talking about how often. Well, you have to see how they go for you. This means you have to try a few different types of speakers, right? Evangelistic. Maybe your church just responds to the vision. And man, when they hear it, they get excited and they get to work and people are brought in and people are saved and locked in. Others, they respond to the supernatural. They need to see miracle healing, or they need a word of wisdom, knowledge, and encouragement. Or maybe they appreciate the experienced minister. Right? As one of the things in the Northeast, sometimes to keep pace in certain churches, you needed a brain. Right? You needed to be able to think things through. Okay? Intellectualism, and I don't want to say that wrong where it's all in the natural, but just that factor to speak their language, right? So all of these factors are very important. So you need to then think, what works for my church? What do they respond to? It might be a mix of different things, and then you can decide how frequent you want to have them. Thirdly is you need to find the mind of God for your area. When I went into Santa Fe, New Mexico, revivals actually weren't very effective. When I talked about having a revival, it was kind of like, oh, okay, that's going to be a long week. But, I'm curious, right? Okay, but why? Why do people feel that way? So I asked one of the main guys to put together a list of the last number of revivals he could remember, in the past couple years. And as I looked at the list, most of the men that came in were pastors, not evangelists. That made a difference. That made a difference. And so as I began to bring evangelists in, specifically, this is their office, this is their ministry, a shift began to happen. And again, they became very effective tools of evangelism. In Rochester, as I already said, they hadn't had a revival in over 2+ years, somewhere in there. And so I needed to be strategic. Who I brought in was going to make or break this, right? I had to be very strategic and deliberate in my decisions. So I had to pray. I had to find the mind of God. And so I have prayed and had God deal with me about specific men to bring in. I already shared with you, Artie Aragon. In 1 year's time, we had him 3 times for revival. But you know what? God was using him. God was moving through him. In Rochester, as I said, I prayed. And when we had Jeff Day, as you know, if you remember, he was in Africa at that time. So he was on furlough and he was going to go visit Rochester. And I just felt like very impressed to invite him to preach for us a week of revival. And he was on board with it. Very helpful, very strategic. Bringing in Pastor Heinberg, I already said I prayed and I felt like he was the one. And God helped us. I've been challenged to have some men back. And this is interesting, who maybe they really connected with new converts, but the older saints weren't really feeling him that first revival. But God was like, this person on my heart. And I'm like, oh man, but you think, right? This is real talk now. But my faithful might not support it. If my faithful don't support it, finances won't be there, right? I'm going to believe God. And when that pastor came back the second time, that evangelist was very timely. He connected and God moved. So you have to get the mind of God. And overall then, this isn't the magic number or the requirement. You should have a minimum of 2 per year. And theoretically, there's no limit. if they're cranking. Some guys have them every quarter. Some guys, just whatever. You gotta see. Look at the big picture. Find the mind of God for your church. What works for you when it comes to revivals? But you need to have them. Okay? Lastly, let's close with how to prepare. So it can be a good idea to have your revivals connected with another event. Right? We did this last night. And that is deliberate. We brought in impact teams to help us get a final thrust of revival flyers out. But we paired it with a play. So now, any visitors that were there, the event draws the visitors. They've shown interest that they're likely to come back to your next event. And you'll be able to, right, say, well, we have this guest speaker coming in. And then if you know what he functions in, right, really incredible testimony like Roman Gutierrez, or man, powerful gift of the healing ministry, you're sick in body, this pastor can pray for you and God can heal you, etc., etc. And so, yeah, you want to have a revival following some major event, play, crusade, or whatever the case might be. And then this can be helpful. A second help is to begin your outreach and advertisement for your revival 3 to 4 weeks ahead of time. Okay, so what that means is you have to plan. Okay? You have to plan. Everywhere, when I was on staff, I learned that we plan out our calendar in advance. Right? So that's what I would do. I'd map out the calendar, and then people would call, hey, I need a team this Saturday. Sorry, my next available date is December of 2030, so not really, but right, you're mapping it out, I did that everywhere I went. In Santa Fe and Rochester, we had it mapped out. We knew where we were headed. That takes work, okay? And I want to just say this, I just wanted to throw this out there. If you want revival, how many want revival in our city, in our church, right? You want revival when you go out and pastor? You want to be effective? I'm going to tell you right now, it takes work. You can't be lazy and have revival. It takes work. It takes energy. It takes time. It takes investment. Okay? And then, remember, when you gather people, you gather problems. Okay? Sometimes God doesn't give men revival because they can't handle the problems. They'll kill the 100 that God gives them. And the 10 they already have. Right? They can't handle it. So, I don't even understand. It's going to take work. And so here, that involves the planning. Right? This gives people time to look ahead to the event. Then we need to utilize ways and methods that we promote our events and our revivals. Okay? Currently we still, and it's just flyers, they still work, okay, flyers. But the point isn't to paper mache, Prescott, Arizona, right? We just put paper and plaster it all over every door. We can utilize our online platforms, utilize digital flyers that we can text and send, utilizing QR codes that get people exactly where they need to get to. Right, that was something we did in Rochester often, is with our flyers, we had QR codes that would go to directly the information they needed, or more information, or ways they could contact people to get more information. And so you need to utilize that. But again, that takes planning, that takes preparation, that takes work in advance. It's very, very sad. And we've helped churches, and this is a true story. We went... took two van loads of people to an impact team to outreach. They had a revival they were starting Sunday. Well, it's the Saturday before, and they worked us like mules because they said this was their one shot to get out 5,000 flyers. It's like, okay, so it's up to us, is what you're saying, right? And it was hot, it was miserable, we were out there, you know, we did it. It was, we, you know, we, I rallied my people, and you know, I often do this, you know, I rally my churches. If we took an impact team out, Rochester or Santa Fe, come here, guys, let's not only, what would we want if we had teams in Santa Fe or if we had teams in Rochester? We would want soul saved. We would want them to be evangelistic. We would want contacts. So let's be that blessing to this church. And we'd rally them up. And man, our churches would always come back with reports of soul saved, great contacts, people healed. And so here, preparation, that helps us. Okay? Very good. All right, let's open it up for some questions. Yeah.
How many or how far along, I guess you would say, or is there a tactic you use of how many people you had in your church or necessarily? how many people you, maybe you had a flood of new people or something like that, and you said, let's do this now, or how many people, I guess I'm trying to say is like, should you not have a revival if you only have a certain amount of people in your church? Should you wait till you have more? Or is it because you only have a certain amount that you should have a revival?
No, not necessarily. Again, you just gotta see what works, right? And you've gotta see where your church is at, right? So, if in a pioneer setting, take this for example, we launched Pastor Andy Rosas out, right? He gathers a group of, you know, 14 solid people, and he's working with a rotation, but he's averaging that at his Bible studies, right? So here they are. They're all fresh. They're all brand new converts. And I don't know exactly the time frame, but time has passed. He gets into his building, right? So what's now? It's just strategic. Grand opening with guest speaker J.W. Ballinger, right? Is by doing that, now it rallies the people he's been working with, and it gets them excited to draw other people. And then I don't remember what it was, like 30 or something like that, their first service. Right, and that's in a revival atmosphere. That's with everyone he's been working with. That's them getting into a new building. There's just a vibrancy. There's life. So it worked out. So again, it just depends where your people are at, which is why I say you need the mind of God, right? Because it's easy to say going into something like Rochester, there's a lot of people, right? But they hadn't had revival in 2+ years. So what do I say? Oh, well, we're just not going to do revivals then because they're not really feeling them. No, I need the mind of God. God, I need you to help me. Who do I bring in, right? So it's not really a number factor, more of where your people are at factor. Yeah.
You said you would be strategic about who to bring in based on the needs of the church.
Correct.
So if there's something that, you know, as a pastor, you're contending for, say, like healing, and there's just numbers of people that are not getting healed, would that be a time when you would get someone who for sure has a gift ministry and to bring them in?
Yeah, and that could you know, be a definitely a great part of that, you know. I remember we had evangelist Richard Valerio in, and we went downtown and did a healing crusade before the revival. Yeah, there in downtown inner city Rochester, and that became a big part of the week. Right, it kicked off with numbers of healings and continued in the week with a healing dimension along with words, etc. And so, but yeah, you know, if you're identifying and getting, you know, contending for breakthrough, yeah, bringing in someone seasoned and experienced, they're not going to be intimidated by it. Versus, I've been trying to, you know, get breakthrough in this area, and you bring in, you know, your pioneer friend. Right? And it's like, yeah, we've been trying to contend. There's such a resistance, and they're just getting smaller and smaller in their mind. And whereas someone with experience can begin to identify maybe and help you break that through. Yeah, it's a possibility.
You mentioned the situation in Santa Fe where Pastor Aragon was paid for, and then 3 weeks later or whatever it was, you had him again, and you had to pay for it. Was there a different dimension between it being funded by your mother church and you self-funding it as far as the faith and the revival? Or
no, we never took any support in Santa Fe. So yeah, that revival was paid by us, the first one.
And okay,
we
so
had
you
to,
did
we mention, had to believe God for the second one.
Would you say there is a difference in, you know, contending for funding and, I mean, maybe not in your own personal experience, but would you say that
Nothing that stood out, honestly, no. Okay. Nothing that stood out, but yeah, it's either way, yeah, God really moved, like I said, in both of those revivals, and then whatever it was, yeah, however it all worked out where he came, but then, you know, he said, man, I should stinking assist you out here, you know? But, yeah, so, yeah, not that I've noticed on your okay. question, nothing specific. David? I would usually just say, just leave me alone. Yeah. No, honestly, yeah, you're going to get that. And definitely people, I've had every, you know, possible angle of people offering their ministry. And I just often learn to just answer, you know what, let me pray about that. Because genuinely, I pray about everybody. And so, yeah, let me pray about that.
How far out should you book a impact team?
An impact team for just in general or for specifically a...
For a revival.
For a revival, okay. Yeah, well, you definitely want, like I said, yesterday was the big thrust, right? We just were able to blast the city in one day and get a mass amount of flyers out. And so you definitely want that booked as far as impact teams. But then we've been outreaching now, what, for a month? We've had flyers that we've been advertising for this revival. So every Saturday, Zach has been saying, you know, in the buffet of flyers, we have all these different events, but in that has been mixed in the revival services. So we've been doing that in, you know, for a month. But as far as booking an impact team, that just depends on your area and who's around you and their availability, right? We would get calls often in Rochester, you know, for our play and even just for impact teams, and we were a year out, you know, and so that's just how we work, you know, because again, we mapped out. I personally want people to know what to expect, you know. If I want their help, I'm gonna help them with their schedule. So, yeah, that depends on the availability of those around, right? If you're in a city like Phoenix, you might be able to draw quite a bit of help on short notice. But if you're, you know, in an area maybe is they have to travel in, like the closest church is an hour and a half away, and then it gets farther and farther from there, then you've got to book a lot further in advance. Versus us in Rochester, I think our nearest church was 3.5 hours away. So anything we booked to bring people in, we had to book it well in advance. And then for us, opposite. If we were going to travel 3.5 hours or 6 hours in one day, then we want to make sure we know what we're getting into. So
5,000 flyers.
Right. So yeah, good. Other questions? Yeah.
When you're looking for a evangelist for a revival, do you ask the pastors that are in your area, or Pastor Greg or someone? When you're finding them, because obviously you don't know every evangelist.
Correct, yeah.
So how do you look at them?
Yeah, so I listen. I listen personally to the noise, you know, of certain evangelists. Like I said, so number one, I always brought Prescott guys in. Always. That was my go-to, right? Why? Because I know, right, for example, Evangelist Hart, right? I know Evangelist Bowman, they're going to be at this table with my pastor, you know, every 2 weeks, and I know they can bring a dimension, right? And Evangelist Wright was also one that was a go-to for me, okay? And so so that was the first. Others, I would listen. Evangelist Valerio, Prescott had him, and okay, yeah, and then, you know, invited him out, and yeah, we had a great time. We had him a second time there in Rochester. And both times, fruit added to the church from his revivals. So, yeah, I listen, I pray, you know. And then again, depending on what I need. What do I need? That's what I'm going to bring you.
How do you decide what specifically to advertise? Because with the revivals, I know it's different phrases or areas of focus.
correct. That depends on what your evangelist has, right? What can they bring?
That's something that you prepare and plan.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, you prepare and plan for it, definitely. Yeah.
When you were in Rochester, were there certain months where you would plan on not necessarily doing anything because the weather would be too bad kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, I stayed active because, right, the old saying, a body in motion stays in motion, a church body in motion stays in motion, okay? So it's you have to keep them moving. So, you know, a lot of the idea is you shut down in the winter, right? But you know what? When you live in a climate like that, the people live in a climate like that, right? They're there by choice, right? And so they've got to work jobs. They've got to pay their mortgages or their rent. They've got to pay their bills. And so, you know, in Rochester, I learned very quickly, we could get snow every day all winter, but the roads, you can depend on them to be clear, right? Yeah, we'd have snow banks over 6 feet tall throughout the winter, but people are still moving. Business is still happening. So if people are still getting out, why would I stop? So you just get strategic. In Rochester, we had the ability to outreach. We had 3 malls, like 6 Walmarts, right? I mean, and so every area, we can hit them a different place every week. So we stayed active. Now, as far as revivals go, I had to be careful. There's certain months, yes, I definitely can't have maybe someone fly in, right? The weather could be a factor there. But in 5 years of ministry, I had to cancel 1 Sunday school, and that's it. So people functioning. Yeah. So you just gotta get eyes for your city, and then see how much you can rally your people. Right. So that takes wisdom and planning. Yep.
The revival. What are all the expenses that you're gonna be paying for?
Okay. Yeah. So you've got, you know, their airfare or travel expenses. You've got their accommodations for the week. You've got their meals for the week. You've got your advertisement that you're preparing for, you know. So again, all those things begin to add up. If you're doing a big event, right, there's been investment leading up to last night's play. So all of that is financial investment going in, you know, as you're planning all this stuff. And so, it just adds up.
Okay, how do you pay for the airfare? Because I'm assuming they're going to book it, right?
Yeah, they'll book it. You just reimburse them. You get a receipt from them and then you reimburse them. Yeah, however it is, they're traveling.
Yeah. Would you recommend, as far as advertising on the social media platforms?
Yeah, so social media. Number one, I want you to understand that I absolutely cannot stand social media, okay? It is the vanity of life. It has done nothing but cause problems, okay? So my recommendation is if you utilize that platform, you do it third party, right? You hire someone to do it for you. Not your church with a Facebook account or an Instagram account, right? Not in favor of that. Again, because now you've got to sit across the desk from people and, oh, but the church has one. So I thought, you know. So do a third party. Pay someone to advertise on those platforms. And then, yeah, they can for you, you know, whatever demographics you want to aim at, you can do it and blast on those platforms, right? But I would recommend it that way. Good question. Good question. Very good. This side, any questions? Very good. Awesome, guys. Good stuff. So this week, Evangelist Puglisi really ministers in the gifts. You saw yesterday a little bit there, you know, that ministry in the altar. Yesterday, that altar call, that altar service, a powerful dimension. And so let's contend this week. I want, and I'm praying. If you see me walking around during a revival, it's because I'm contending. I'm contending. I'm pulling for people to get words of encouragement, of wisdom, of knowledge. I'm contending this week for dramatic healings. I'm contending for visitors. People that prayed last week with Roman in the services are going to return this week and lock in and become part of the church. Right? These are things I'm going to contend for this week and have been contending for. Now I invite you to help me to pray that way. So, awesome. Good stuff. Appreciate all the help yesterday, and looking forward to a fruitful week.